the UFO Files. I'm Jerry Pippin. On February 13th of this year, 2009, one of the pioneers in UFO research, Wesley H. Bateman, passed away. Rod C. Davis of rodcdavis.com was a good friend of Wes for several years. We know Rod, and Rod has actually worked with us on some projects. So we thought we'd talk to Rod about Wes, and we have him on the line from his home in Las Vegas. Welcome to the show, Rod. And by the way, how did you meet Wes Bateman?
A person that knew Wes and knew me back in 1999 felt that it was important that he introduced the two of us for some reason. And he did. And Wes and I became friends because there was a synergy between us. We maintained the friendship. It grew closer and closer as time went on. Wes shared a lot with me. He seemed to think that I could understand everything that he was talking with me when he started giving, reeling off the numbers of different formulas and the pi factor and the RH factors and all these other factors, and he'd start reeling off these numbers that were behind them. And I was impressed by the numbers, and I followed what he said when he was trying to explain everything to me, but math and me in school never, I didn't care for math. I always cared for writing, and that's where I think that match came between Wes and me. He did a lot of math and a lot of things, and when he needed something written and in a formal way, he'd send it to me, and I would write it and put it in a formal way. And a lot of what he sent to me is posted on my website.
I was just over to your website, rodcdavis.com, before we did the show. And you have some interesting things about Wes all right there. You know, he was a pretty educated fellow.
Very much so. He was a physicist, and he spent 25 years studying the Great Pyramid. And while studying the Great Pyramid, he found that there was an ancient math that was utilized to construct it. And I guess the best way to describe it is that he was able to, through analysis, determine what the math was. Once he put that math system together, he called it the Ra mathematical system.
R-A, Ra. In fact, he even composed some music using the Ra system. And this music would make the plants grow.
And when he did that music, it changed the tone. The parameters that we were utilizing for tone we were off by a few decimal points as to what the universal law is for a particular wavelength, and he put the that wavelength to the math and applied that to the Ra music, and when he applied that to the Ra music and the wavelength, it actually changed the tone.
Well, I saw a pretty phenomenal demonstration of that music one time when I was over at his house in Dolan Springs, Arizona. He showed me the garden, and I guess the things would grow really exponentially to the music.
Yes,
it was amazing.
As a matter of fact, in the garden that they had in their backyard, because they played that music 24/7, there were ancient plants that emerged that hadn't been seen by people for years and years and years, and I don't know how many. Kind of similar to plants that when they got so much rain in the Death Valley about 4 years ago, plants came up that people were asking the park rangers what they were, and they had no clue because they'd never seen them, and there was no record of them in their history.
I think most people know that when we interviewed Wes Bateman, we had to go over to his house because basically he couldn't move. I mean, he was immobile. He was bedridden. What happened to him? Was it a car accident?
No, he had a bout with cancer.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, and the radiation therapy that he received affected the muscles in his legs, and it made them tighten up, and where he was having a great deal of difficulty trying to straighten them, and he just lost, after a period of years, he just lost control of his legs. When I first met him, he was still able to walk. But he had a great deal of difficulty.
Well, I must say, it did not slow him down.
No.
I know he had his Mac, and he loved that computer.
He did. His mind never shut down, although I'll have to say in the last couple of years, he did rest more than he did in previous years. I guess he was just kind of plain wearing out. And his body wore out, but his desire to move forward and get things done did
not. Well, the last couple of months were pretty bad for him. He was in and out of the hospital.
Yes, and in and out of consciousness. He was in a coma for a while. And the last time that I saw him, I always pray for people for their recovery, but I make sure that they want to recover before I pray, because I may be prolonging something for them. And I asked him, I says, Wes, are you ready to pass over, or do you want to live? And he says, I absolutely want to live. So I continued to pray for him, but even though he wanted to live, it was his time to go back home.
The thing I liked about Wes was, I was fascinated with his stories about being a UFO investigator and having a UFO meeting, a group, conference. Basically, they would have weekly meetings there in Los Angeles. I guess that was back in the 50s.
Yes. He used to have seminars in about space travel and UFOs, and he used to joke where he had seven chairs set up in the front for the men in black to come and sit.
Yeah, he told me he could always tell the black ops people, the FBI, CIA, etc., they were the ones dressed nicely.
That's correct.
Well, the secret agents weren't the only ones coming to those meetings. Hollywood scriptwriters would go there. Gene Roddenberry went there several
and,
times.
Not as many as his writers did. His writers attended many of the meetings. And that's where they obtained lots and lots of their ideas for, was it Star Trek?
Yes.
Yeah, Star Trek.
We spent a lot of time with Wes discussing those things about Star Trek, like wormholes and warp drive and all of that, how it would work.
Yes.
Wes had the answers.
Yeah, and he liked to talk about that a lot. There was one experience that... I had, and it's posted on your website, about 50 minutes of missing time that I had in 1973. Do you recall that, Jerry?
Yes.
And I kept asking Wes what he thought happened to me. And finally, one day he answered me. He said, I think you were taken aside and given some information for future use. And I think that statement was 100% accurate, because 1 year later to the day that I had that missing time, unplanned, I ended up going there with a woman whom I met who had a similar body problem as Wes did, and I had experienced as being something shoving into my side. Well, where something shoved into my side that I could not see, although it was absolutely there, but I couldn't see what did it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where I got jabbed, this woman had a pain that would not go away, and doctors could not find the cause of it, and Wes had the same thing. And I said, geez, maybe I ought to take her to see Wes, and he agreed. And when we were there, I don't know what I expected, but no bells or whistles or anything went off, and we were just sitting there talking. And he was talking about how spaceships can travel great light years in a short period of time. And when he did, all of a sudden the air changed between us, and it looked like I was looking at him through very still water or very thick glass. And Wes stopped talking right at that moment when the air changed. And he started looking all around, up in the air. And then I saw a brownish black line about a half inch wide and maybe 7 or 8 inches long. And it had oscillating lines going up and down it. And I saw it go from me to him. And when it got to him, everything went back to normal. Wes started talking again. And like nothing happened. And I said, once he finished talking about how spaceships can travel a great distance of light years in a short period of time, I said to him, Wes, I says, how come you stopped talking for however long it was? And he said, I didn't. He looked at me kind of weird. And Deborah, the woman whom I brought there, she looked at him. She says, yes, you did. You stopped talking. And then I told him what happened. And he said to me, that was the outer state, and Wes was a telepathic, and the outer state are the beings that are not on our planet. He said, that was the outer state communicating to you through me. And I said, I don't think so, because I saw it go from me to you. So I think Wes was right. I think that when I was pulled aside, I was given information to pass on to him at a certain point in time. Because a few days later, when I called him, he was very excited. He says, Rod, I made a major breakthrough on the SETI messages that I've been working on. And you remember that he was working on
yes.
That line? Yeah. And so I think something had to do with that that line going from
As
me
those,
to him.
Those SETI messages, they kept him occupied.
I think he used the raw mathematical formula to decipher those.
How did his death affect the messages? I mean, had he accomplished much?
Had accomplished a lot, and
okay.
He gained a ton of information. And that was really what he wanted to continue to work on, because he had so many good things that he could use from that information that he learned to help humanity. And at this point in time, there's a few people that knew of several of the things that he wanted to accomplish, but they're not doing it for humanity. They're doing it for personal gains. And basically, they've taken his information and well, that's the way life goes.
I think we probably need to explain to the audience a little more in detail about what we're talking about, these SETI messages.
The SETI messages, there was 9 messages we received via radio telescope. And it was in Puerto Rico. I don't remember exactly the location. It escapes me at the moment. But there was 9 messages that were received via radio telescope. And those messages were posted on the Internet by an individual whose name escapes me right now, but there's a complete story about it in Wes's section on my website. And the guy posted that hoping that somebody could solve these messages. And Wes went to great detail after he knew that these were not, the way he was able to solve them was the math that he learned by studying the Great Pyramid of Giza and the Ra math that he developed, the ancient math. And it turned out that math applied directly to these messages, and that's how he was able to decipher them.
He was obviously fascinated with the Great Pyramids of Egypt. What did he decide? I mean, what was his hypothesis about them?
I mean, who built them?
Regarding the pyramid itself, that it was not built by anybody on this planet.
Did he ever tell you who, you know, where or who these extraterrestrials that built the pyramids were or for from or whatever?
If he did, and if he mentioned it, Jerry, I do not.
One of the reasons he kept going, I think, and the way it was to beat cancer as long as he did, is the fact that he was on a mission.
He had a mission, and he reminded me of a person that I knew very well in Boston, Massachusetts. He told me he was 70-some-odd years old at the time, and he says, Rod, he says, I'm never going to die. And I said, why is that? He says, because God gave me so many tasks that I had to complete in this lifetime, and right now I'm so far behind, I'm never going to die.
What do you think the legacy of Wes Bateman will be? I mean, what will we remember him most about? You know what I'm saying.
I would like to think that when all is said and done, that he will be remembered for what he tried to commit to humanity by what his stand was and what he learned from the SETI messages. So many people wanted to take that information and use it for private reasons. And they said that they would give him the funding to be able to set up the computers and whatnot, to decipher them more quickly. And he always refused it unless they would sign an agreement where this was to be used for humanity and not for their financial gain. That's correct. They would never sign it. Wes had a great heart as a humanitarian, and I think that belief was instilled in him by what he learned from his telepathic communication with the outer state.
You know, Wes Bateman was a very serious fellow, an accomplished scientist, a good mathematician.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a good sense of humor.
That he did.
he was a big Art Bell fan. And one time, he knew I knew that. And one time he sent me an email, a picture that he had worked, I guess, with Photoshop or something. And it had Art Bell holding a sign that says, I listen to Jerry Pippen, or something like that.
Yeah. I think that's very appropriate, don't you?
It's on the website here with this interview. You know, another thing, he didn't seem to mind living out there in Dolan Springs, out there in the middle of nowhere.
Actually, he liked it. He ended up there because he went underground for a while. Did he tell you why he did that?
No.
Because he tried to patent some plasma. It was some type of plasma reactor technology. When he tried to do that, he was approached by the federal government saying that this was highly classified information, yada, 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 and they started making threats toward him that he could end up in jail, and it wouldn't be because he was trying to bring the... it wouldn't be on the fact that he was trying to patent that technology. It would be other causes that they would dream up that would put him in jail. And so he went underground because he was afraid that they would live up to what they were saying. And he stayed underground for many, many years. And it was when we met, little by little, he started to be less afraid of saying things that he said. And he put things in place that if anything happened to him and he disappeared, his technology and information would still go on. And he made that known to whomever, and that's what gave him his comfort. That's when he started posting everything that he did on my website and opening up a lot more.
And it's still there.
Yes, it's still there.
And we have a link over there so people can go read about it.
Yeah, and I'm going to leave it there. I need to find a way to make this as in memoriam to Wes Bateman. I haven't figured out how to do that yet.
Dolan Springs, that's where he lived. That was Well, it was out in the middle of nowhere, frankly, off of Highway 93 on this side, the Arizona side of Hoover Dam, some miles, 30, 40 miles. In fact, you take that road that goes to Dolan Springs, Nancy McKinney went with me one time, and she went on back up to her home in Sedona, the back way by the Grand Canyon. James Smith, one of our producers, went out with me one time to Las Vegas, and he said, I need to meet Wes Bateman. Now, James, he's a techie from Dallas, and he had a lot of points with the rental car company, and we were able to get a Jaguar. So we went out to Dolan Springs in this Jaguar on these lousy roads, dirt roads, and we got a lot of attention, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and most of the people in that town are destitute.
Right, there's not much there. Oh, well, there's that bar. You know about that.
The thing is that even the first time that I went out there with the directions he gave me, I still needed a seeing eye dog.
I think James and I got pretty close, but we couldn't find it.
Uh-huh.
One time, Roberta Scott and Farah Yudoza and I went out there, and we got lost again. And Farah saw a wolf, and she wanted to get back to Nevada. How long did he live in Dolan Springs?
Yeah, well, he was there in the late 90s. Prior to that, he was living in Las Vegas, but he didn't feel safe here. And ended up leaving and going to Dolan Springs. And I asked him several times how he ended up going to specifically Dolan Springs. And every time he was about to answer me, something would come up that he'd digress, and I never found out.
Well, he was famous for that, too.
Yes, absolutely. He'd always come back to the point, well, I say always, 99%.
Well, he was pretty good at that, changing the subject or getting sidetracked. But, you know, he always got into something very interesting, so that was okay. Now, his wife preceded him in death.
Yes. Yeah.
She helped him. I think she was a UFO researcher, too, and a scientist, or an intelligent woman, I mean, at least.
Yes. Yeah. Both of them...
Both of them died of cancer. Makes you wonder about that.
He seems to think that their cause for the health problems was because they crossed over the frequency barrier too many times when they were taken by the ETs outside of our planetary system.
Yeah, what did he tell you about the abductions, or did he?
Never really went into any detail about that, and I'm remiss at this point in time for. I'm sure he would have if I asked. I do remember that when back in the days when he was conducting his seminars, he would call in all of the army brass, military brass, government people, and tell them he's going to tell them exactly where and when a UFO would appear. And he became quite notable at that point in time because of that. And I think at that point in time, too, that not only did he know when they would appear, but I think that they brought him outside of our planet system.
Well, you know, he lived up in Idaho for a little while and had a UFO experience up there. Did he ever tell you about that?
Where it went right behind his wife when he took a picture?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, yeah, you mentioned that, too, but, I mean, he had a UFO experience. UFO landed there. Right there on the Snake River.
Near,
same place Evel Knievel tried to jump, you know.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wes, right after he passed, he communicated with me.
Really?
Several times.
Tell me about that.
You know, he showed me himself. First he appeared as I had originally, or as I knew him, with the where they had done the operations on his face with the cancer. And then he appeared right after that, the way he looked in his picture that you have on his on your website. He showed me lots and lots and lots of numbers and formulas, and I kept, but they were, he was showing it to me, they were so fast that I couldn't remember them, and then I kept saying, Wes, I said, listen, I don't understand. I don't know numbers. You need to do something different. And he showed me, for some reason, the road going into Bryce Canyon.
Up in Utah.
His daughter, if she knew what that was about. And she said, well, he had something going on there, but I don't know what it was. So he was trying to share something about that, I'm pretty sure. He communicated with me a total of three times. The first two times were showing me a bunch of numbers, locations that were not on this planet. I'm certain of that.
And it just didn't look like the Earth?
No, it didn't look like the Earth at all. I sensed that it wasn't the Earth also. Mm-hmm. And then the last time was about a week and a half ago when he appeared, and he was showing me a bunch of numbers, and he had asked me each time to tell Deanna that
that's his daughter.
To tell her that he was okay, and that was all happening when we were coming from the east to the west, and just so much going on.
Yeah, I know you just recently drove across country. Where did this happen? In a hotel?
Once in a hotel, once in the location I was back east, and then the third time was once we were physically settled here. And when we were physically settled here, he was showing me a bunch of locations and numbers and different symbols. And then he showed me a big red heart, like a Valentine heart, and there was the word love right in the middle of it, and then it just kept getting larger and larger and larger until it burst. And then he just said, share with Deanna that my love is bursting, or I'm bursting with love for her. And that was the last time he's come to me. He hasn't come since, and maybe it's because I just don't understand, and he's gotten impatient with me. I have no idea.
Before I let you go, how are you doing? I've known you for a long time. Every time I touch base with you in recent times, you seem to be more spiritual. You were always a spiritual guy.
Spirit has really blessed me. There's something that the Spirit has been urging me to do for quite a few years, and I'm finally starting to do that. I'm writing a book, which I posted a preview of on my website, Interdimensional Communication, Yes, You Can, Find Your Freedom, Knowledge, and Happiness from Within. I'm getting a lot of fun. I'm having a lot of fun rewriting it, and it's kind of like when I sit down to write, it's like it flows. So.
Kind of like heavenly writing, or whatever they call that.
Yes. And I'm close to finishing up the book that I'm co-writing with Stephanie Ann Stevens.
Yeah, I talked to Stephanie the other day about that book. It sounds interesting.
Yeah,
we probably got four or five more chapters to go, which is Metaphysical Master, Servant of God. And the things that that she has experienced and what she tries to share with people is an awesome learning experience for all of us. And I, in writing, co-writing this with her, I almost feel like I know her as well as I know myself.
Yeah, Stephanie's quite the woman.
Yes, quite the woman.
And Jack, her husband's a pretty good guy too.
Yes, I love them both. We came very, very close to moving in their area when we were wanting to come back west, and it didn't work out at that point in time. But it's going to happen.
Well, you and I have something in common. Las Vegas is like a magnet; keeps drawing you back. Can't get too far away from Vegas.
they say what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Yeah.
I didn't happen here, but I guess I'd like to stay here.
Yeah. RodCDavis.com is the website. Rod, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Unfortunately, it's a sad occasion, but it's been a nice way to give a tribute to one of the UFO pioneers, one of the investigators, the scientific angles of ufology, Wesley H. Bateman. God rest his soul. Thanks, Rod. We'll talk to you again soon. Tell your lovely wife hello.
I will do that. Thank you.
Okay, we'll talk to you later.
Take care. Bye.
This has been a tribute to Wesley H. Bateman. He passed away February 13th. I'm Jerry Pippin. Thank you for listening. Until next time, cheers.